My mother died in November of 2003 at the age of 94. The following May, I flew back to California to take part in a memorial service that my brother had arranged. It was attended by 50 or so old friends, colleagues, and especially former piano students. My mother had been a piano teacher in Modesto, California for quite a long time. As part of the service, we did what has become customary at such affairs. We invited anyone who wished to stand up and tell a story of remembrance of my mother. Well, several people did. And some of the stories they told blew me away. They told things about my mother about which I had had not a clue. I learned about a whole different side of her life to which I had been a complete stranger. They weren't bad things, not at all. Some of them were, in fact, quite wonderful, about ways she helped and encouraged people, not just in piano or music, but in their lives. So many things about her that I didn't know, but I suspect that that is the case with most of us. How much of what we think we know about our mothers is real, and how much is cultural stereotype? Not surprisingly, motherhood holds a sacred place in every culture. It is the central fact in the continuation of the species, the bringing forth of new life. Motherhood is also a metaphor for the sacred, the dearly loved, the basis and origin of all things. Think about all the different ways in which we use the term. Mother love. Mother of God. Mother nature. Mother earth or earth mother. The mother church or the mother temple. Motherland or mother country. Mother tongue or mother wit. Mother superior. House mother. Den mother. Mother of pearl or mother of vinegar. Mother goose and mother Hubbard. The mother goddess. Mother naked. The mother cell. Mother liquor. In chemistry, that's a term from which crystals, for the liquid from which crystals precipitate. And of course, necessity is the mother of invention. Our English word mother comes from the Anglo-Saxon mador, which is from the Latin mater or matris, which in turn is from the Sanskrit mater or matar. Thus we have alma mater, the kindly mother, matron, and matriarch. The word matrix also comes from this root. Its original meaning is the womb, and it has come to mean the enveloping protective element with which anything within which something develops or forms. In biology, the matrix is the material that envelops, protects, and nourishes every cell in the body. The motherhood that we celebrate today is generally thought of as the celebration and honoring of our female parents, our mothers, biological or adoptive, who brought us into the world, introduced us to the world and the world to us. Certainly, that is reason enough to honor this day. Yesterday, I took my mother-in-law to lunch in order to beat the rush today. The image of the mother nurturing and protecting her children, is deeply embedded in our collective psyche. The mother, who seeing her child pinned beneath the car, summons a superhuman strength to lift the car and save the child. The single mom, who holds down two jobs and endures endless hardship to feed her children. The mother wolf, protecting her cubs with such ferocity that even the alpha male backs off. Candy's mom, Helen, became an object of some fear among the aides at the nursing home. When she saw something that needed to be done, or anything that she thought would help her daughter, she charged into the nursing station or even the director's office and wouldn't leave until it got done. In the Theravadin tradition, it is said that mother and father should be seen as like both the god Brahma and teachers of old. They are worthy of offerings and help on account of their compassionately bringing up their children and introducing them to the world. In Sri Lanka, it is held that the mother is the Buddha at home, in the sense that she is owed great respect for what she has done for her children. And even today, in Asian countries, it is not uncommon for the eldest woman of the household, a grandmother or such, to be called the old Buddha. Dogen often refers to his teacher, Ju Qing, as old Buddha. Zen teachers are sometimes accused of grandmotherly kindness by other Zen teachers. It's a little hard to tell from context whether this is really a compliment. But anyone, man or woman, who has taught students has experienced this grandmotherly kindness, an unquenchable desire to educate, to see another person move out, to live on his or her own as an independent and caring citizen. The word education, educo in Latin, means to lead out. To lead out of what? Out of whatever prison we are in at the time, whether it be ignorance, fear, greed, or anger. Notice, however, it is to lead out, not to carry out or push out. There can be no coercion here, and the student or the child has an obligation as well. One of the greatest joys that I experienced as a biology teacher in a school for massage therapists was to see what happened to students as they moved through the program. Many who came were uncertain, even terrified at the prospect of touching another human body. You wondered why they even wanted to go into a profession that is all about touch. Some of these had been abused as children, and somehow they knew that human touch was their way to liberation from a traumatized childhood. But to see how they lost their fears and gained skills and presence as therapists was to watch a never-ending miracle. Sometimes a student would come back to visit after a few years out there in the profession and say, in effect, "Thank you for the education I received here." Talk about making my day. I remember one woman in particular who, when she entered the school, had just escaped from an abusive husband. About 2 years after she graduated, I had lunch with her, and the transformation was astounding. She was happy, stable, and confident. She had her own business with four therapists working for her. I couldn't have been prouder of her if I had indeed been her parent. There is a bittersweet aspect to any form of motherhood, because ultimately it is about letting go. My brother and I went off to college as young men, and our mother stayed at home teaching piano, as she continued to do for over 40 years. For some 30 years, I taught anatomy and basic biology to students, only to see them leave, go off to other lives. Some stayed in the massage profession for years. Others changed careers after a while to become other kinds of therapists or business people, computer programmers and artists. A few went on to medical school. I like to think that their background in massage therapy made them far better physicians. But I remain behind, in a sense. Another great teacher, Moses, led his people out of bondage to the Promised Land. But he himself did not complete the journey. He led them to a certain point, and then he had to let them go on their own. So there is a kind of motherhood that goes beyond gender and biology, a motherliness that transcends all distinctions, that is beyond man, woman, good, evil, self, other. It is most succinctly defined in the following passage. The Bodhisattva of compassion, from the depths of Prajna wisdom, saw the emptiness of all five skandhas and sundered the bonds that create suffering. I think we all recognize that. The Heart Sutra that we chanted this morning is a very small piece of what is known as Prajnaparamita, a sutra that was originally some 100,000 lines. The Prajnaparamita came into the world along with a number of other Mahayana scriptures sometime around the first century before the Common Era. Now, the sutras are usually thought of as being the words of the Buddha, the discourses that he gave during his life on this earth. But here we have a whole body of literature that emerges some 400 years after the Buddha's Parinirvana. I won't go into detail about the mythology of how all that happened, except to say that it involves our Indian ancestor Nagarjuna visiting the undersea kingdom of the Nagas, i.e. dragons, where he is given many volumes of previously undiscovered texts to take back to the world. These texts were the basis of what came to be called Mahayana Buddhism, and among them was the very long version of the Prajnaparamita. A major departure of the Mahayana schools of Buddhism from the earlier schools was the emergence of the Bodhisattva as the epitome of the mature practitioner. The earlier paradigm of the Arhat was about one who eventually, after many lifetimes of practice, entered final nirvana, never again to be reborn into this life. But the Bodhisattva, the wisdom being and Mahayana ideal, has postponed entry into nirvana indefinitely, voluntarily remaining in the world of samsara, the cycle of birth and death, in order to continue to help all sentient beings. Someone asked a contemporary Zen teacher where he wanted to be reborn after he died. He said, "I would want to be reborn in hell, because that is where I would be most needed." Even more radical is Yongja in his Song of Enlightenment, where he writes, "Many births, many deaths, I am serene in this cycle." The only way that Yongja can say this is that he realizes fully that the cycle of birth and death has no intrinsic reality. And it would be difficult to imagine a more total commitment to the saving of all beings. In his meditation on Prajnaparamita, Lex Hickson writes, The Bodhisattva will always maintain a motherly mind, consecrated to the constant protection, education, and maturing of conscious beings, inviting them and guiding them along the path of all-embracing love. This Mahayana mind never succumbs to fear, anxiety, or depression, and is never overwhelmed by the strange adventures of awareness in the three realms of relativity, mundane form, sublime form, and formlessness. This sounds like some impossible ideal, but it is simply another way of describing the awakened mind. The awakened one sees clearly that there is and can never be the slightest degree of separation from others, not in space, not in time. How could one who realized this possibly not develop this motherly mind? The Metta Sutta, the meditation on loving kindness that we are just beginning to chant on a regular basis, says, "Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings." A mother's desire for her children's happiness and freedom is simply a reflection of the Bodhisattva's longing for the liberation of all beings. Hickson continues, "All living beings suffer," teaches the Buddha. "Sentient beings are therefore the inspirers and recipients of heartfelt compassion and are, in a sense, benefactors or even mothers of the bodhisattvas who vow to liberate them from suffering." Yes. Without suffering, what need is there for compassion, Buddhas or bodhisattvas? But the first noble truth is that suffering is endemic to human existence. It is the suffering that creates the need for and the arising of the Buddhas and bodhisattvas. Thus, the Prajnaparamita is called the mother of all the Buddhas. Case number 45 in the Wumenguan, that's the Mumenkan. Wu Tzu said, "Shakyamuni and Maitreya are servants of another. Tell me, who is that other?" Wu Tzu could just as well have asked, "Shakyamuni and Maitreya are children of another. Who is that other?" This is why the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas never put on airs or place themselves in any special position. They realize that they are the servants, the children, even as each of us. Now the question arises, okay, mothers do wonderful things, but is not the term bodhisattva reserved for the true spiritual practitioner who has vowed to postpone nirvana to save all beings? Well, be careful here. Bodhidharma says, "The self nature is inconceivably wondrous. In the realm of the one, not holding dualistic concepts of ordinary beings and sages is called the precept of not defaming the three treasures." Do not fall into the trap of making distinctions. It is also said that there are no enlightened beings. There are only enlightened actions. The fact is, we cannot know who or what a person is in any existential way. We can only see what they do. So today I choose to appreciate those motherly actions that comfort and heal. The Bodhisattva appears in any of us at unexpected moments of generosity and service. Kanon or whoever shows up a lot of the time and packing lunches for school, taking care of us when we're sick, taking us places like parks, libraries, concerts, soccer practice, band practice. My gratitude for motherliness certainly includes my mother, to whom I owe so much, but also for motherliness in all its forms and from all sources. A couple of days after Candy died, two members of the center came by with a cauldron of soup that would have fed a medium-sized Sechen. I was very grateful for that. Gratitude for motherhood, motherliness, is not about some abstract assessment of who a person might be. It is for the action of the moment. Time and again, in the koans, the masters take us out of emptiness and our abstractions and help us to be reborn in the world. But still, we are reborn as suffering beings, for being itself is suffering. But reborn also as bodhisattvas, who see clearly the absolute nature of emptiness, but do not attach to it. We speak of the serious lay practitioner as living in the world, but not of the world. That is, not attached to the things of the world. But it goes the other way, too. The practitioner, the bodhisattva, sees clearly the absolute nature of emptiness, but is not swallowed up by it. So, to all of you who are mothers, and to all who have mothers, happy Mother's Day. Now, since this is Mother's Day, I suspect that many here are taking their mothers to dinner, cleaning their houses, bringing them flowers. So at this point, I would like to invite anyone who wishes to say something about their mother or motherhood, gratitude, appreciation, or a story that you think might help the rest of us get to know your mother and how you have experienced her, or your own experience as a mother, or about this motherliness from anyone to anyone. The floor is open.